Blog Talk Radio.
There aren't too many overnight successes.
even in a sense of overnight successes, there have been years and years of training, you know, to get somebody there. Except, yeah, of course, viral videos and that kind of thing, that doesn't count. But, you know, we're talking talent, real talent, you know, continued talent and success. And it can take years, and in my case, you know, many years. But we've been broadcasting now for 15 years. 1999, and actually, what does it say? It's 16 years. Yeah, 16 years. My first program was July of 1999, and so my first television show. So that you know, says that that's when I started. So you know, you think about it, you know, 16 years in this business isn't that long, I guess. But considering that we have an international audience for our website, my read, my book, my website, my show has been heard by over 200,000 people here just on the blog talk alone. And, you know, we've had over 1 million visitors on my website since 2004. The website's been up for for what, 15 years now? 11 years. Yeah, 11 years. I started it in 2004. So, but, you know, the important thing to remember before I begin the show tonight, the first thing I wanted to remember is, you know, everything depends on keeping going, pressing on, you know, regardless of what you're doing. It all takes time. And eventually, it'll, you know, it will become what it is, you know. And all the work that you put into it, all the hard work that you put into it, dedication, devotion, will eventually pay off in some way. But tonight I wanted to continue my reading of Finding the Third Eye. And chapters 8 is where we left off last week, and it's called the Secrets of Breathing. And I've been skipping some of the chapters going ahead because this book is in itself a form of a workshop, you know. But I think it's critical to mention the secrets of breathing, and I'm going to talk about the secrets of color and the secrets of sound tonight. I hope we can get through all of that. In the secrets of breathing, continuing our study of the phenomena of life, we can next consider the universal activity of breathing. This very strange process is indeed much more widespread than we would at first suppose. We are told that the creation of the world was begun when the Creator breathed upon the waters. And again, the symbolical explanation of the creation of man tells how he was formed out of the dust into which was breathed the breath of life. The tremendous importance of breath could hardly have been more infinitely emphasized, but we have paid little attention to the invaluable hints bequeathed to us by those ancient savants in their veiled language. We know that plants breathe, and lately have discovered the metals breathe also. And scientists are busy studying the long, drawn-out rhythms of the sun. If we apply to the mystics on this point, they tell us that the sun breathes regularly, in each breath taking 11 years, and causes all of its fullness, the appearance of sunspots upon its surface. The sun is called the heart of the solar system. We may suspect that it really is the heart of a very vast living being, in whose breath we have our own breathing and living. We are familiar with the main chemical aspects are there to counteract the law of gravitation, which pulls us to the Earth. At the sea level, the pressure is about six times. I'm sorry. The pressure is about 16 pounds to the square inch, and this must be equalized by the intake of air. That is why the lungs never empty at the air, all the air they contain. Their total capacity is said to be 250 cubic inches, but they only empty 150, so that there always remains 100 cubic inches of air within them. For this reason, if it is desired to clean and refresh the lungs, very prolonged outward breaths is the most efficient, Nature's way of refreshing us is to cause us to collapse limply into a chair and sigh out a long breath. We can do that, you know, just by breathing outwards, breathing out all the air in our lungs. In breathing, we absorb the oxygen from the air into our lungs to be used for the production of heat and energy through combustion with the circumstance or the substances contained in our food, and we exhale the poisons as carbonic acid gas. The animals breathe in the same way, but plants, on the other hand, need to breathe in carbonic acid gas for their substance, which is carbon dioxide. And here we have one of the secrets of the give and take existing in nature, and the reason why animals and plants could not live without each other. In a normal human being, there are approximately 16 to 18 breaths per minute, each taking in 30 cubic inches of air. Each breath consists of inspiration, expiration, and a pause, the whole process taking up the time of four heartbeats. Our artificial methods of living are gradually ruined the natural quality of our breathing, and hardly one person in 50 breathes as nature intended. The correct muscular action is as follows. The lungs are contained within the basket of the ribs, the whole resembling a balloon, which inflates at the intake of breath and deflates at the exhaling. There is a muscle at the base of the lungs that should contract them upward at the inhalation, but in most people, the muscle is inactive. Now, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? I thought so. There is a muscle at the base of the lungs which should contract them upwards at the inhalation, but in most people, the muscle is inactive. Many breathe downwards into their abdomen, pressing down the already sagging internal organs. In correct breathing, the whole chest is uplifted at the intake of the breath, and this raises up all the internal organs from their stagnant position. At the inhalation, the diaphragm muscle, aforementioned, contracts again upward, dragging up still further the organs below. Correct breathing in this manner will, of course, exercise a continuous gentle massage and stimulation of the digestive organs, thereby ensuring perfect action of the alimentary canal and eliminating the need for pills and drugs. The second important aspect of breathing is the rate at which we breathe, the frequency, as we should say in wireless parlance. We have seen that the whole of life is built up by means of different speeds of vibration, and therefore the rate of motion of anything is the most important factor about it, determining what it is. Therefore, we cannot overestimate the significance of the speed and rhythm of our breathing. Show me how you breathe, and I will tell you what manner of man you are. That's amazing. The yogis in Eastern sages make a very deep study of breathing and have evolved a profound science from it. By means of this science, they profess to accomplish many things, such as prolonging their youth and their years of living, and attaining to various degrees of trance and clairvoyance, by means of which they gain access to knowledge. This science has been handed down from teacher to pupil for thousands of years, and is only accessible to and possible for the very few. But it is said to be a forerunner of the attainment of all humanity in the dim future. Certain it is that all who wish to obtain any degree of control of their health, character, or circumstances must first begin at the very foundation of their lives, their breathing. Having put in order the mechanical muscular action of breathing, the next thing is to consider is the rhythm. We have now to realize that as not only physical things, but also thoughts, feelings, and various forces exist all around us by reason of their particular number or rate of vibration. So we are all the time tuning into this, for that according to our own rate of vibration, which is adjusted by our breathing, we can think of ourselves as wireless receivers, and it is up to our ego to or will to tune us in and decide what we shall receive. I have said that normally there are 16 to 18 breaths per minute. It is said that if the breathing is changed to about 26 light breaths per minute, it will be impossible after a short time to feel pain. That is why in the heat of battle, terrible wounds can be received without feeling them at all. It is also why many great feats are accomplished under the stress of excitement. The breath quickens, the blood heats up, and this drives the ego slightly out of the body, so that sensations are little felt. Extreme indulgence in alcohol has the same effect. That is why intoxicated persons seldom hurt themselves. We can do and suffer things in hot blood, which we can never achieve in cold blood. There is an interesting story in the Bible in connection with this. When Amalek drew the Israelites into battle, Moses went to the top of a hill. He held up his arms, using his great hypnotic powers, to prevent the enemy from working themselves up into the fighting frenzy in which they would partly leave their bodies. He prevented them from quickening their breathing, and so they had to fight in cold blood and could not prevail. Directly, Moses dropped his arms from fatigue, and the battle would go against the Israelites. Martial music is designed to quicken the breath and the emotions. So is the color red on flag and uniform. It is quite impossible to become excited if one breathes slowly. That is why a person in a rage is asked to stop and count 10. The breathing inevitably slows down and excites, and the excitement drops. Some of the sages believe that we have a definite number of breaths allotted to us for our lives. Those who waste them and speed them up in excitability and emotionalism shorten their span. Those who become philosophers in the true sense of the word, balanced, measured, and contented, will be able to live to the very ripe old age with unimpaired faculties. By quickening the breath, the body loses its power of self-protection and exhausts and injures itself without feeling it at the time. By slowing the breathing down to 10 or 12 breaths per minute, it will be found impossible to feel excited, irritable, or nervy. This is a useful and visible little exercise with which we can protect ourselves from those states of mind which tend to poison our system. If the breathing is reduced to a deep, slow rhythm of 10 per minute for 5 minutes, the brain will become marvelously clear and ready for work. This can be done before taking up any study, the result lasting for some hours. Many of the conflicting vibrations and thoughts we allow to pass haphazard through body and brain will have been canceled out by the rhythmic, powerful beat brought about by the slower breathing. If the breathing can be dropped to an even 3 per minute, all the bodily vibratory activities will have become so subdued and harmonized that the more delicate psychic perceptions will be discernible, and giving us what we call inspiration, instinct, or premonition, for they are the instigators of all great achievements. The above-mentioned rate of breathing can be used without danger if practiced gradually and intelligently. But it is extremely dangerous for the average person to attempt any of the more complicated systems, sometimes unwisely given out, which might lead them to a mental home, or which might lead them into a mental home, or worse. Yogis can slow down the breath to 1 per minute, which allows them an intensity of concentration, resulting in experiments beyond our imagination or comprehension. Finally, they are able to suspend the breathing altogether and allow themselves to be buried for weeks at a time without coming to any harm. That's a fascinating. Breathing must always be performed through the nose, quite silently, steadily, regularly, and without strain. It should preferably be practiced in a quiet place and not just after eating. While breathing, the mind should be focused on the highest ideals and aspirations. Remember that we are breathing in, besides oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen, a host of subtle and powerful elements and forces. It is the mind which constantly directs the selection and utilization of these powers. We breathe in life, we breathe in God, and according as to what we aspire. Slow, deep, gentle breathing will cure insomnia, nerves, blood pressure, fear, brain fag, and bad temper. The Easterns apparently know many things about breathing with which the Westerners would be world is not yet familiar. They believe, for instance, that in correct breathing, only one nostril is actually used at a time. This is said to be caused by a tissue in each nostril, which swells at alternate intervals, which allow full use of only one nostril. There are said to be two currents which pass up and down the spine, the one on the right side being positive, the one on the left side negative. The breathing, therefore, is performed alternately, along an electrical current in drawing positive sun-ruled particles and magnetic current in drawing negative moon-ruled particles. It is said that by using this knowledge, the temperature of the body can be regulated. Astrologically, a sign comes up on the ascendant every 2 hours, alternately a positive and negative sign, and this is connected with the breathing. It is said that Indian doctors always study the patient's breathing first of all, being in this way able to determine the condition of the magnetic and electrical areas in the body at the time. Apparently, after a meal, or during the changeover, both nostrils are used, so that it takes a little time to determine the exact state of affairs. The expert in these matters would, however, know the quality of this power of achievement at any given hour, and being thus able to ensure the maximum of creative output with the minimums of expended energy. There, whereas all we now know is that we are either in the mood for work or not, and this results in an indifferent and uneven output. A simple little experiment will point this out. Let one person lie lie down straight and stiff on a couple of chairs. Let four persons stand around him, one at each shoulder and one at each knee. Let one placing a finger beneath their prone comrade. All must then breathe steadily and in unison for a minute or so. Finally, after the intake of breath, raise the prone man into the air upon the tips of the fingers. They will seem to weigh nothing at all. That's amazing. The Egyptians and earlier races could lift mighty stones by some agency which still puzzles scientists. Were they perhaps able to overcome the laws of gravity by concentrated scientific breathing on a large scale? If four people can lift, say, 12 stones without feeling it by breathing in unison, what could 1,000 do? It has been found in some factories that the output of work is much improved by allowing the workers to sing. After all, that has been said about breathing it will be realized at once that an enormous power for good singing could be if prosperity used and understood. There is no end to the benefit of to be obtained by combining breathing, rhythm, and sound as it is singing. A person who is timid, cowardly, or shy narrows his chest and breathes feebly. Diseases such as asthma are probably the direct result of a nervous breathing. If we are calm, confident, and courageous, we breathe deep and slow. As an aid to attaining these qualities, we must first correct our breathing. Everyone should breathe Everyone should breathe in the divine breath of life with all his heart and sing his song of thanksgiving no less regularly than do the birds. Huh. I think that's interesting. That is very interesting. And the secrets of color. I want to bring that up in just a second. Reading this is rather intense, I have to say, because it takes a lot of focus and a lot of, course, to narrate. But when I try to, I don't know if this happens to you or not, or to my listeners here who are in tune to this. Whenever I get to a level of spiritual contemplation, in reading, reading some texts, which I feel are greatly inspired, and I believe this text is inspired, spiritually inspired, no question about this, that in some degree, very inspired and almost channel thing. But I can tell that when I'm reading something like this or certain, how the, sometimes I actually have to stop because I become so absorbed with it in my mind, and it kind of just takes over my consciousness, you know, and to the extent where I become quite tired. How to explain? Because it feels like in certain books and certain esoteric texts, spiritual texts, channel texts. It, by reading it, it heightens your senses, it heightens your vibration, okay? So that if you're used to a constant vibration of who knows what, this, and you read these, it comes from a mind and a body and a entity that exists on a much higher vibratory plane than you do. So if you are interpreting this, reading these books, reading this, you find that your mind wanders, you can wander, or you become absorbed into that dimension that it's being written from or narrated by, to. There's a number of books that I've read on this program that, you know, have that quality as an ability for, to transform you into another dimension. You know, and you know, I find at times that I am I do transcend while I'm reading in many cases, and I don't know when it's, I don't realize until I'm far into the text how effective or not effective, but how spiritually derived these words are. You know, from what dimension? What am I speaking? That's why I was inspired to entitle this program Transdimensional Radio, because I'm speaking from, I'm continually speaking from a different dimension. I go in and out of dimensions in this program, whether I'm reading these esoteric books or whether I'm just talking to you, you know, like right now, or trying to describe to you a scene or an idea or a vision, you know, that I've had or I'm having or I'm undergoing, that is multidimensional, you know, or it may not be multidimensional. It may be from a different dimension, you know, but I'm trying to bring it to an audience to see it, and in doing so, it's like in reading this book, I can get lost in the text, I can get lost in that dimension and be not aware that it's not translating properly to third dimension. To my listener. So let me go on before I I just talked about that, about both nostrils and an expert in these matters would, however, know the quality of his powers of achievement at any given hour, thus able to ensure the maximum of creative output with the minimum of expended energy. Whereas all we now know is that we are either in the mood for work or not, and this result is an indifferent and even an uneven output. The much-discussed power of levitation, in which a yogi is said to be able to conquer the laws of gravity and rise in the air, appears to have a strong connection with breathing. A simple little experiment will point this out. Let one person lie down straight and stiff in a couple of chairs. Let four persons stand around them, and one in each shoulder and one at each knee, and each one placing a finger beneath their prone comrade. All must then breathe steadily and in unison for a minute or so. Finally, after the intake of breath, raise the prone man into the air upon the tips of the fingers. We will seem to weigh nothing at all. The Egyptians in earlier races could lift mighty stones by some agency which still puzzles the scientists. They were perhaps able to overcome the laws of gravity by concentrated scientific breathing on a large scale. If four people can lift, say, 12 stone without feeling it, by breathing in unison, what could 1,000 do? It has been found in some factories that the output of work which improved by allowing the workers to sing. After all that has been said about breathing, it will be realized at once that an enormous power for good singing could be, if properly used and understood. There is no end to the benefit to be obtained by combining breathing, rhythms, and sound as in singing. A person who is timid, cowardly, or shy narrows his chest and breathes feebly. Diseases such as asthma are probably the direct result of nervous breathing. If we are calm, confident, and courageous, we breathe deep and slow. As an aid to attaining these qualities, we must first correct our breathing. Everyone should breathe in the divine breath of life with all of his heart and sing his song of thanksgiving no less regularly than do the birds. Some poets, the secrets of color. Some poets have said, color is not in a rose, but in ourselves. What is color? In chapter 2, we stated that out of the vast scale of nature's vibrations, a tiny octave is registered by the optic nerve. Our physical eyes respond to these particular vibrations with a reaction which we know as color. If we had no eyes, those vibrations would still exist, but as what? Medical science has proved that different colors have definite and varied effects on our nervous system, and that they act upon us quite independently of our eyes or mind. Their influence is particularly marked in the case of lunatics. It has been suggested that colors are really rays radiating down to this earth at their specific rates of vibration. A red rose reflects back all the color rays except red, which it absorbs. And our optic nerves react to its vibrations, and we say, the rose is red. The perfect blending of the seven color rays in the bright daylight gives us a white light. If the rays are split up by being passed through a glass prism, they are at once visible as colors. In the same way, a rainbow is produced by the rainbow is produced by the minute prismatic effects of rain in the sky. If you walk around a fountain in the sun at a certain point, you will see a rainbow. The color rays are pouring down on the earth night and day. Every atom responds to them, thereby announcing its own quality to those who are able to decipher the language of colors. Where do these rays come from, and what are they? I have noted that the seven major planets of our solar system are radiating these various forces outwards, so that they reach this Earth at considerable strength. As there are also seven primary color rays radiating to the Earth, we may suspect a definite connection here, and perhaps that's the color. And are really an expression of the planetary rays observable by this as they are absorbed and held by different objects. The planets are composed of minerals and chemicals. In each planet, one particular metal is said of by astrologists to predominate. In Mars, it is iron, and in Mercury, it is that metal. Mercury. And particles of itself for hundreds of years, so do these enormous planets radiate subtle emanations. Emanations of everything of which he is composed. A clairvoyant or person with extra sensitive sight is able to see the colors of these rays at a certain angle and speaks of them as the person's aura. Let us name the colors in the order in which they appear at the spectrum. We take red first because it has the lowest vibration. Being therefore the same, right? We take red first because it is the lowest vibration, even therefore the coarsest and most physical vitalizing. Its place on the scale is just above the heat vibrations, and it is heat giving in itself. As the vibrations increase in heat up the scale, we come to orange, then to yellow, then green, blue, indigo, and violet leading us on up into the extraordinarily penetrating and rapid vibrations of the violet ray. There's so much here, you know, and there's so much to talk about. Let's see. The second color, first color being red, I guess, second color in the spectrum, when predominating in herbs, colors, lights, or glass and surrounding gives warmth, increased circulation, vitality, and energy to the body, and cheerfulness, stimulation, and excitement to the spirit. The red flag has been used throughout history for incendiarism. Finally, if dark red is seen in the aura, it indicates passion and a fighting spirit. The second color in the spectrum is orange. The beautiful color is associated with the sun and has also a warming and invigorating effect. But whereas red is stimulating to the body and the blood, orange is stimulating to the emotions. It cures those states of paralysis which are often due to emotional reaction. It should be avoided by extremely emotional types who should acquire balance through its complementary color. Its note is D in the musical scale. Melodies in that key have a strong emotional appeal. The metal belongs to the sun. The metal belonging to the sun is gold, for which the alchemists believed they could attain the elixir of life, which rendered man immortal. Used as a medicine, gold has a very purifying effect. The third color in the spectrum is yellow. We are told that this color belongs to the planet Mercury. Mercury confers a quick intellect by surprise. Rather than go through what this is kind of redundant, I wanted to. Yellow is a third of the color scale. It corresponds to the muscle note of E, or the musical note, rather, of E. Its jewel is the yellow topaz, and it represents luminosity. When seen in the human aura, yellow, if dark and crude, tells of deceit, treachery, and cowardice. We have all heard of the yellow streak, but if pale, pure and luminous, it shows high wisdom and intellectuality. The fourth color is green, standing in the center of the scale of seven. It is the meeting ground between the thermal or heating and expanding colors of red, orange, and yellow. electrical contracting cooling colors of blue, indigo, and violet. Green gives stability, endurance, quietude. We are allowed much of it to look at in nature and to partake of its nourishment. Its action is to cool, cool the blood and animate the nerves. It belongs to the planet Saturn. Those mental and lead, whose metal is lead, rather. I'm getting tired, I guess. Saturn rules the spleen, which makes the white corpuscles of the blood. These harmonize the building and destroying going on in the human organism. So people with the luminous green of Saturn and their auras are the harmonizers and pacifiers of the world. They stand for social justice, social stability. If the green is dark and crude, it tells that its owner, so concerned with the affairs of others, has become green with envy. Green belongs to the fourth of the musical scale, F, whose melody is usually in a minor key. Singer of melancholy, always associated with Saturn. Its stone, therefore, whether through lights, color, colored glass or earth, green gives us all around steady and quieting influences. The green flag and lamp represent safety and speak of the guardianship of those in authority. We are told that on the planet Saturn live our spirit guardian spirits. Now we leave the heating colors and pass through to cooling, contracting one blue, indigo, and violet. These rays have a cooling, narcotic, and antiseptic action. They act as sedatives to the vascular nervous system. Undue mania and regret and angry passion, inflammations, sunstroke, insomnia, eye strain, and all irritating conditions of mind and body. Sedatives, antiseptics, and narcotics contain such of these colors. Narcotic flowers are blue and purple. Blackberries are valued for their astringent qualities. Blue belongs to the planet Venus, the giver of love, devotion, and harmony. Is the stone? Its stone is the amethyst, the super sacred of the seven sacred jewels. Pale blue is the aura represents devotion, while dark blue shows fanaticism. One can either be true blue or have a fit of the blues, according to one's outlook. Okay. Dr. Babbitt says that the blue lenses, filled with water and exposed to sunlight, become impregnated with sulfur, chlorine, cobalt, manganese, and other properties having soothing and antiseptic action. This water will never putrefy. It acts as a sedative and an antiseptic and is cooling, especially for the blood. The musical note of blue is G, favorite key for the composer of romantic music. Indigo is the sixth of its color scale. It is like green, a meeting ground for all the colors. Its action through herbs and chemicals is intermediately between blue and violet, soothing both nerves and blood. Its planet is said to be Uranus, and its stone is jet. In the aura, it shows dignity and high aspirations. Purple or violet is the seventh and last of the color octave. It represents the seventh and highest quality which man attains, noble spiritual aspiration. Therefore, it has always been connected antiseptic. This is all violet. Okay, not purple. Purple and violet in the aura speak of honor, spirituality, and self-esteem. Above the violet is the awe of the aura, and the aura speak of honor, spirituality, and self-esteem. Above the violet, we begin a new octave of higher and more ethereal colors, mostly unseen to the average human eye. The first is rose, which is the red of Mars, transfused into its higher octave, where it speaks of optimism, hope, and spiritualized love. The colors continue in octaves, which become more and more sublineated. Luminous, pure, and pale will in the end be held, or rather will in the end blend back again into the glorious white light from whence they sprang. When the character of a human being is sublimated and perfected, the colors of his aura also resolve themselves into a white spiritual light. In the golden days, people were able to see this. They represented it in the halo shining around the head of a saint. Colors, therefore, are of the very deepest significance to us throughout all phases of our life. They have more influence upon us than we can possibly imagine. If we can use them intelligently, they are the greatest of friends, strengthening, soothing, and inspiring. Dark, drab, and dingy colors harm our spirits, morals, and health. They encourage crime, inhibition, inferiority complexes, suicide, and stunted development. They act to prevent the radiation of personal magnetism that give and take between human beings. They inhibit optimism, inspiration, and therefore success. A glance at some of our streets in their dingy dark bricks and shrieking posters will at once show us one reason why apathy, dullness, and poor health are still prevalent. Brown is the color of earth and holds us to the earth and to material thought. Gray is neutral and useful as a background to other colors. White reflects back all the rays and is therefore cooling and restful. Black absorbs them all and is therefore warm, although neutralized. The modern trend toward pain, pastel shades, shows a promising underwaking to a new uplifting color sense. A color campaign intelligently launched would do much to cheer, inspire, and invigorate humanity. And with that, I think I'll stop because that's I'm getting a little hoarse actually, and this I'd like to take up this next week, this next chapter, which is the Secrets of Sound. And it just states, in the beginning was the Word. Thus is the importance of sound emphasized to us, although so simply and directly that it is easy to miss its significance. The universe was created by speech. The Creator did not act. He spoke. He said, let there be light, and there was light. Yeah. This is a fascinating chapter, but I don't think I really have time to do it justice tonight. And but just as a teaser, I'd just like to say the universe was created by speech. I just read this book, and God spoke. Let us not pass over these words with a shrug, as they were charming fairy tales designed to enthrall the naive people of old. The deepest scientific knowledge of all times was always thus veiled by symbolism and by myth, and rich is the reward of every effort at interpretation. certain of the ancient people made a profound study of chemistry. The fact that they chose to give to their chemicals the names of gods and goddesses and to describe their reactions under the guise of myths and legends does not in the least distract from their actual knowledge. On the contrary, it may show how much deeper and further they penetrated into the realms of ultimate causes than men of science do today. We were told by those teachers of antiquity that the formation of this universe out of chaos was brought about by the breath and word of the Creator, by sound. Certain sounds produced differing sets of vibrations in the ether. Some of these were of very low frequency, but they formed particulars of what we call matter or physical substance. There could not be light as we know it without minute specks of matter in the ether to reflect it. We learn that later these particles of matter collided, coalesced, and force of their mutual attraction of gravity, or gravity, causing them to commence spinning. And the endless arrangement thus formed produced this solar system and all that is therein. And we can gain an idea of the infinite number of these arrangements by considering the vast scale of vibrations with which we dealt in Chapter 2. I'm pretty sure I read Chapter 2 to you, but Chapter 1. I did not read that. It's what modern science says regarding sound. But anyway, I'm going to end tonight's show here, and I want to thank everybody. And, you know, I did look up on Amazon, and I found that this book is available in a paperback edition on Amazon. It's called The Finding of the Third Eye by Vera Stanley Alder, A-L-D-E-R. And it's only $6 or $7, very cheap. And you can get there. I think it's only about, let's see, maybe 100 pages. About 100 pages long. Yeah. And 100 and some odd. Very short. It's a short book. But I hope that you will I hope you got something out of tonight's show. And if you're really interested, you can buy this book at Amazon. Go to Amazon.com and just look up The Finding of the Third Eye by Vera Stanley Alder. And with that, I'm going to close tonight, and I wish you a very, very good weekend. And I hope that you'll tell your friends about the program and do your own research and, join me again next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. Good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.